We're very informal here.
We are, yes. And we decided rather than preach sermons that we would have a conversation about these readings that we're going to share. And we've had some time over the past few weeks to share and talk together. So we thought we would share some of that conversation with you this morning.
Yeah.
So I brought that Robert Bly poem partly because I think in the work that we're doing in the world, the work that the world is calling for us, the lives that we're living, there is so much pressure for us to do and perform and be and get things right and get things done, that message at the end of the poem of, if you lie down, no one will die, is just a really important message, I think, for me. I think, you know, Robert Bly was coming out of a movement that was working to get men more in touch with their emotions and their inner realities in a world that expected men to be sort of upright and unemotional. And so that was the work that he was trying to do in that poem. But I think that message is for all of us.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, it speaks to this internal process, right? To self-awareness that we all of us want to practice and right. cultivate, yeah. right? This practice of being open and being focused on our self-care, of putting on our oxygen masks before attending to the person next to us. If we are taking care of ourselves, we have a lot more capacity
right.
to and take if, care of what needs to be done.
And if we aren't taking care of ourselves, then we're not doing the best job we could do. But even if you don't like that mentality, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we don't do things well. We don't react to challenges in constructive and relational and loving ways. We Absolutely. Get snarky or violent. And so I think that learning about self-care is really important. The other thing that comes through for me in the poem is, you know, the theme for the month of December is wonder. And we started playing around with the word wonder, you know, wonder being about wonder, but also wondering. And I think one of the other things that comes through is this invitation from Bly to not be afraid when the phone rings or there's a knock at the door or we meet something new, to not be afraid, but to respond to it with curiosity and wonder and go, huh, I wonder what's next.
Yeah. Yeah. Parker Palmer talks about that, right? This idea that even when you're in conversation, right, not necessarily when something external happens like the phone ringing, but when we're in conversation with each other and the conversation turns in a way that maybe we don't care for, maybe it brings up some things and makes us a little anxious, he suggests turning to wonder, to not assume that the person's trying to push our buttons, and instead to go, I wonder what it is that they're saying that they want to come from, and I wonder what it is in me that is bringing up that response.
Yeah, and so that self-knowledge is part of that self-care, is self-knowledge, to know what we're bringing and to be able to see, oh, wait a minute, like you just said, oh, that's pushing that button there. Yeah. And I also, I think about the, and we'll come back to the story as well. We're going to include the story in this, but this idea that I very much reflect the idea that the gazelle and the elephant in that story were very much, I'm not curious about anything. I know I'm good at this. I'm going to go and do this thing. And then something new comes along, that lovely little rabbit hole. And they have no way of coping with that. They have no, because they don't know themselves well. And they, you know, and we'll talk about other things, but yeah,
yeah,
it really connects there.
What a fabulous metaphor for our times, right? These past 2.5 years have been rabbit hole after rabbit hole after rabbit hole. And we don't know when that next rabbit hole is going to come up and what it's going to look like and who it's going to trip up.
Right.
Right. So this idea of what the young tortoise was doing, this practice that he had of chanting to himself, to remember, to ground himself, ungali, ungali, practice.
Practice.
Yeah.
Trying to think what else we wanted to say.
I think that's what we want to leave.
That's where we want to leave this one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so Susan's going to read to us some more.
Oh, we're going to stay right here.
Okay. But they want to. Go to the next slide. Okay. Our second wisdom reading is an excerpt from a 2016 interview with American novelist, essayist, and poet Barbara Kingsolver. I think my dad is still the most optimistic person I know. I've been thinking a lot lately about the difference between being optimistic and being hopeful. I would say that I'm a hopeful person, although not necessarily optimistic. Here's how I would describe it. The pessimist would say, it's going to be a terrible winter, we're all going to die. The optimist would say, oh, it'll be all right. I don't think it'll be that bad. The hopeful person would say, maybe someone will still be alive in February, so I'm going to put some potatoes in the root cellar just in case. And that's where I lodge myself on this spectrum. I think hope is a mode of resistance. Hope is how parents get through the most difficult parts of their kids' teenage years. Hope is how a cancer patient endures painful treatments. Hope is how people on a picket line keep showing up. If you look at hope that way, it's not a state of mind, but something we actually do with our hearts and our hands to navigate ourselves through the difficult passages. I think that as a fiction writer or any kind of writer, hope is a gift I can try to cultivate.
Thank you, Susan. So the reason we have two wisdom readings is that you and I couldn't pick one of those two,
right?
Because they speak to like sort of the same thing, but in such different ways, right? The Robert Bly poem, it's internal. It's about self-awareness. It's about self-practice. This piece I love because it speaks more to engagement. It speaks about acting ourselves into being hopeful. Yeah, and I mean, myself, I like that idea of hope being an active thing, an action, and an active thing, rather than being this passive, what can I do? And at the same time, there is this kind of intertwining, right? We know it's not one or the other. We are not simply internally thinking one thing and just focusing on that. And we're not simply acting in the world to try to create and sustain hope. We're doing both always at the same time and in community, right? So people are doing it together. So it's a dual practice.
It's a dual practice. And it's also, I think the Kingsolver, like you said, elevates it both from an internal to an external, but also reminds us that we're not just hopeful or we don't just worry about these things for ourselves, but we are part of communities and that our work, the work of hope is to be hopeful for our communities. And that practice of putting potatoes in the root cellar just in case someone survives, that choice to do something rather than just think about it, rather than just say, oh, it'll be fine, it'll be okay. But to say, it's going to be okay because I can do these things, we can do these things. And I think for me, that idea of practice, I come back to that word of practice. And I come back to our story about the small tortoise. And the reason the small tortoise is successful, I think, in saving his community in that situation. It's not that he believes that he's the best, or not that he believes he's the strongest or never forgets or anything, but that he commits to a practice. Like he chants that, well, golly, he learns that is part of him because he's created that practice. And this practice of doing that, this practice of putting potatoes in the root cellar, this practice of coming back to each other, the practice of knowing ourselves deeply so that we know, I think it all comes back to practice. And so these things that we do, hope or optimism or community support or collective work, are not just things that happen. They happen because we commit to returning to them over and over and over again.
Right. Yeah. Right. And you know, y'all know every generation says, oh my God, it can't possibly get any worse, right? Things can't get any harder.
Right.
And that includes us right now, right? We are facing so many things. We are facing so many things.
And I think one of the things you said to me in our conversations about this, we've been talking about us as individuals, even us as individuals working to support our communities. But the thing that you said to me that stuck when we spoke last was, we're not doing these things alone. Mm-hmm. That it's the collective practice that is powerful.
Right, for me, for sure, right? There's all these things I can do on my own that are good for me and my self-care, and some things that I can do on my own that that support others. You know, I can give to charities, I can walk a thon, I can do all these things by myself. But the thing that brings me hope is not the fact that those things are happening, but the things that I can do with others, the sharing of the work, the learning together, and the doing things together. It gives me comfort, right? Because I'm not alone. I don't have to do all these things alone. And others care about it too, and are willing to throw in to the thing. And so the kind of internal part and the external work feed each other. I get support from doing the work, and the more supported I feel, the more of the work I can engage in and the from a better place.
And I think why I love that we sang Dark of Winter at the beginning of the service. You know, I think that we head into what we know are going to be difficult times. We head into winter, where I'm living these days. We head into the 115 degrees of summer. I did bring it to pin gloves and mitts this weekend. we can choose to head into those with dread, because we know how hard that, we know it's not that winter is not hard. Cold is hard, dark is hard, the wind is hard, it's difficult for us to survive through. So we're not pretending that it's not, but we're heading into it with hope, heading into it with practices that will help make it survivable. And not just something to survive. Like, I think the other thing that I think from the Robert Bly, all of this, is we're not just surviving the hard time, but if we approach them with wonder, with a sense of wonder, a sense of curiosity, where is the beauty in this? It's still hard, but then they're not these gaps in our lives. They are fertile ground for, we often talk about winter as time for introspection, it's a time for care for ourselves. And so seeing a practice of seeing the hard times as fertile ground for us to grow through, I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, so creating a practice,
yeah,
is a practice of hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's where we're going.
I think that's good.
Yeah. Thank you, Ian.